Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Well, as they never say in professional broadcasting, is this thing on? It appears to be. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. This is the 19th day of September, 2016. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I'm sorry about Thursday and Friday. Not my fault. Not your fault either. That kind of narrows it down, doesn't it? Yeah. Internet's still not okay here, but through the miracle of modern cell technology, I have cabbaged and cobbled together, using a great deal of bubble gum and baling wire, enough metered bandwidth connectivity to hopefully get the show out and run the rerun stream until such time as the regular unmetered bandwidth is all squared away. It's one of those internet thingies. Thank you, Jeremy in Vermont. Welcome back, Bob. Loud and clear on TuneIn. I was worried that the Wi-Fi poison had gotten you, too. Brains! Oh, my brains! Yeah. No, it was something much more prosaic than that. That generally can sometimes occasionally be remedied with Prozac. Not in this case, though. I've just had 4 days of cussing and screaming. And I really did start adding it up after a while. I think I'm around 12 hours on tech support calls with our ISP. Man, they're awful. But that raises the other question. Are there any good ones? It's apparently Randy said I wouldn't be surprised if your unmetered modem had gone bad. No, they seem to be fine. At least according to the actual human physical tech person who, yeah. We'll find it, but it's going to take some time. thank you. Note coming from Harold, president and CEO of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, saying internet streaming okay. Oh, it's so nice to be welcomed back. Steve in New York, all caps in the subject line. Stop telling me how to vote! Randy pointing out that Apple tech support is pretty good. I wish this was something Apple could help with. Unfortunately, they're not in the internet business. Although a quantum leap has been made with the iOS 10 update. Now, when you go to type the word internet, autocorrect will no longer capitalize it for you. And I'm one of those people that didn't like capitalized internet. The third switch is thrown, Marty. Don't do that to me. The third switch is thrown. But, you know, so anyway, all right. So here's where we stand. We got a great crowd in the joining up in the chat room. If you'd like to be part of it, just go over to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, and then click. Just jump in and pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and pray to God your computer cooperates with Java, or, you know, pray to the flying spaghetti monster, or, you know, you pick. And then you will be immediately met and welcomed by Anatole, Don from Central PA, Hoghead, Jeremy in Vermont, Jug of Punch, Labor Man, and Snork. Thank you, Snork, by the way. So here's where we stand. As of Wednesday, at the end, yeah, we were in a hole, and it was a big one. And thanks to subscribers, thanks to Chris in Germany, and a number of other people, it's not as bad as it could be. But we entered the program this evening, or would have a little bit ago, with a $700 fundraising hole. I don't like that. You don't like that. We don't like that. Thankfully, I mentioned Snork. Thankfully, Snork and Joy and Nancy took that down to $650. So we have a $650 fundraising hole. But wait, it's not as bad as it sounds. I also mentioned Chris in Germany. Chris has kindly offered, and I do mean kindly, Chris has kindly offered to match the first $200 that come in. So that would immediately take us down to $250, which is far more manageable than $700. So, as of this mention, the next $200 that come in get doubled. Your 5 becomes 10, 10, 20, 20, 40, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, courtesy of Chris in Germany, because, well, it would be nice to beat the Swede for 9 months running, and we are on the downhill side of September, which is kind of mind-blowing all by itself. And, holes are bad. Holes are bad things. So we need it. Is it possible that we could raise $650 this evening? Well, the first 200 turning into 400 would go a long way toward that, wouldn't it? Okay, thank you, Earther. Whatever you do, Bob, just don't throw switch 1, 1A, 2B, 1B, 2B, 3. Mandatory Star Trek reference. Hi, Brother Bob. Hi, Earther. Yeah. So that's where we stand. If you want to help us get out of this hole, fill it in some, go over to headonradionetwork.com, click on Contribute, and fill out the stuff there on the PayPal interface, everything. You know, everything except what you do for Hank Kimball down to the county agent office there. You can leave that blank. Just get to the next screen. At the next screen, you can choose credit cards, PayPal, what have you. And I'm still trying to figure out why. This is a private message to Fab. I'm still trying to figure out why that doesn't work for you, because I'm not used to contributing money to the horn. I don't know. I'm working on it. But I really, really am working on it. If you prefer to use the United States mail, well, that opportunity remains for you as well. Just grab an envelope, address it to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. And checks and money orders, because, well, we go get the mail the same place the Klan goes and gets its mail, and, well, you know, Klan. But that's why Boss Man Wayne has the spider-proof gloves for when he has to reach into the echo chamber. But if there's something there, he leaves them in the truck and just takes a nice sturdy old sawed-off broom handle with him in case he runs into the Exalted Kleagle or the Grand Noble Dragon or what have you. Okay, Okay, so there we are. That's where we start with the program this evening. At some point in time, I will get the website when John and I get some time and John gets some bandwidth. We'll get together and get the website in a little better functionality, so that I can post stuff over there about it. But when there's not going to be a program, there is going to be a program. I almost always put it on either Twitter or Facebook or both. And if you want to follow me on either, it's Bob Kincaid in both cases. Facebook, Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, and at Bob Kincaid on Twitter. So if you follow either one of those, you should get my updates and whatnot. All right, so two days away, and I hate it. I desperately need a vacation, but that was not the vacation I needed because it was all wrapped up in calls to the tech center. And let's see, I talked to Linda and Dennis and Alexis and Tara. And I'm sure these are all their real names, but it was all to no avail. There was a mic in there, and it was all to no avail. I don't think they actually know any more or knew any more than I did. So it didn't really, qualify as much in the way of your vacation, because it wasn't. But I did try to, as best I could, with the metered bandwidth and whatnot, keep up with the news as it was out there. That's right. What you hear when you call, Marty, when you call their tech support, they proudly announce, "Thank you for calling tech support, where all of our agents are America-based." Ta-da! Yeah. It doesn't seem to make much difference, though. "I can't help you" is pretty much the same whether the English is stilted and third or fourth language, or whether the individual was born saying, "I can't help you." It works out to the, it's a wash. But I tried to keep up with what was going on. But frankly, Thursday was a million years ago, wasn't it? Friday was a million years ago. And now we are in the grips of a great American hysteria. Because somebody blew something up in New York. Where, oddly enough, and Steve in New York and our other listeners in the city can tell us otherwise, but New Yorkers sort of took it in stride, didn't freak out, but out in the heartland, Emery and Marvelline are scared shitless. They are, because they're all convinced that any day now their local Wally World could just become a great big heap of smoke and rubble. Because the ISIS. Yeah. Well, that's true. In regard to my statement, holes are bad, Brother Deacon Asa points out, holes ain't all that bad, Brother Bob. Bob Pittman pulls a healthy $1.5 million a year in salary and bonuses, despite Clear Channel, which is now called iHeartRadio, being in a $1 trillion hole. Yeah, but just think of what he'd be pulling down if it was only a $999 billion hole. Yeah. So you get the idea, right? But then again, we're not them. But we're making progress on said whole, and that is inspiring indeed. Thanks going out to Tosh and Jack and Cowie. So that's it. That's $85 that just got turned into 170. So we've got $115 to go to reach Chris's challenge. So, is that what we talk about, the pressure cooker bomb that didn't go off? One of the more interesting angles coming out of that was the heroism of some homeless people at a railroad station in, Elizabeth, New Jersey? They saw something decidedly strange as they were foraging for something to sustain their lives, a couple of homeless guys at the train station in Elizabeth, and they immediately went and told the police, who did the right thing and prevented that. Naturally, being the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, or Benito J. Trump, billionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht and an airplane, he wouldn't do anything tawdry like trying to capitalize on, no, yes, so we got that. And now we know, and I admit, I freely admit when I'm wrong. When I first saw New York Mayor Bill de Blasio announced that it wasn't terrorism, but it was an intentional act, my first thought was, well, this means it's a white guy. Because if something blows up and it was intended to blow up, but it was not terrorism, you know, usually that's a Bundy. Apparently the suspect who was shot today in a gun battle with police in Linden, New Jersey, had been to Afghanistan, had grievances, etc., and went about, and apparently, you know, it's kind of hit or miss with pipe bombs and pressure cooker bombs. Some went off, some did not. But it's always important that you've got cooler heads and calmer voices to prevail in these sorts of situations. Gary What's Aleppo Johnson, the libertarian candidate for president, when asked about it, said, "I'm just glad no one was hurt." Now, mind you, 29 people were injured by the one explosion in Chelsea in New York City. But Gary Johnson was just glad that no one was hurt. I wish I was making that stuff up. Meanwhile, Steve writes from New York, "I was downtown when the explosion happened, not near it. I was in Chinatown. I was getting on the bus home when I saw police cars, fire engines, and so forth, as you said. We were on the bus, we got off the bus, went to a train. When that train wasn't running, we went to another train. And didn't run screaming and tearing at your clothing and a hollering and a hooting and a carrying on and swearing up and down that it was the end times and the Antichrist was about to duke it out with Jesus in Hell's Kitchen or something. No. No. Meanwhile, in the chat room, Hoghead notes, "I want whatever Gary Johnson is smoking." It's got to be good. It's got to be really good. And I would be remiss if I didn't note here at 19 minutes past the hour, this is, in fact, More In Monday. We got music and sound effects and all kinds of stuff, but I thought we'd just jump straight into the More Ins, which just kind of sounds icky and wrong, doesn't it? But no, so on the one hand, you got the homeless guys who see something with wires and a cell phone attached to it And they went and called authorities. And most of these events seem to center in the greater New York, New Jersey metro area. Although there was a stabbing in Minnesota. And that, of course, at a mall. And that, of course, has Emery and Marvelline in a perturbed fit as well. Oh, thank you for the clarification, Steve in New York. Gary Johnson isn't smoking anything. He's just dumb. And you can ask any number of New Mexico citizens, New Mexicans, and they would probably say, "Yep, that would be it. He's dumb." Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, and elsewhere, the paranoia has taken hold, and we probably won't know as far as motivations for the guy in New York, New Jersey. But I couldn't help thinking back when I began to read the bombing news. You know, it was last week we had the story of the woman in New York who was just standing there window shopping when she noticed that somebody had tried to light her on fire. But the police then, and she was a Muslim woman, and the police then said, no, this doesn't appear. Asshole tried to light some other people on fire, too. No, this isn't a hate crime. This is a stupid fire crime. So we had that. On the other hand, if you go back to September 10th, about 9 days ago, Brooklyn, New York, two Muslim women were pushing their babies in strollers when 32-year-old Emirheta Shahili, Shalili, who took to social media to declare her undying support for Benito J. Trump. Benito Cheeto. Wait a minute. I think we got something we can work here with. According to the New York Daily News, she hurled Islamophobic insults as she pounced on the two victims near her Bath Beach home about 1:30 p.m. On the Thursday next prior to September the 10th. "Get the fuck out of here," the 32-year-old woman yelled at the pair. "Get the fuck out of America, bitches." And then she started punching the 23-year-old women in the face. She kicked them in their legs. She tried to tear their Muslim headgear off their heads and tried to knock over the stroller that had a 15-month-old baby in it. Among other things, she posted on social media, "America is the Ark of Noah. Trump's gonna win." Woo! Thorazine Dart. But that was news 9 days ago in the city that never sleeps. And you can't help wondering how these things play into the mind of people already bent on violence. And then, thank you, Arnold. To take a line from you, that's a fuckwit. Thank you. But out in greater Merca, we are on a heightened state of alert. Consider something that took place in Marshall's Creek, Pennsylvania. Because after all, sitting over there in their desert stronghold, the wild-eyed leadership of ISIS is sitting around wondering what they can do to really up America, and they think Marshall's Creek, Pennsylvania. We'll hit them in Marshall's Creek, Pennsylvania. That'll get them. And so they're right nervous in Marshall's Creek, Pennsylvania, which is up in the Poconos. They got a Gulf filling station, a gasoline station in Marshall's Creek, Pennsylvania. And that's where today at least three Pennsylvania State Police cruisers showed up, as well as the Hazardous Devices and Explosives Unit. Because they had a near tragedy in Marshall's Creek, Pennsylvania today. Some people had come to the Gulf station there and filled and gotten them some gasoline, and they took off. And it was then that the intrepid worker at the Gulf station in Marshall's Creek, Pennsylvania, noticed a box. A box left sitting on top of the gas pump. Yeah. And operating on sweat condition alpha now in Merca, where our new motto is, if you see something, say something, which was, a good thing for the homeless guys in New Jersey to do. Well, the attendant at the Gulf station in Marshall's Creek, Pennsylvania, saw something and said something, because it was right there on top of the gas pumps. It was a cardboard box, and it had them Arabic letter thingies that ain't really letters, because that ain't really a language. It's a political system, not a religion, Islam. But it had some Islamic writing on it. That box did. Yeah. And a customer seen it first. And then they called the police, and the police came a flying out with their three cruisers and their hazardous devices and explosives unit. And they followed proper policing procedures. And then one of the police officers opened up the box and took something out of it and put it in his mouth. And he said, yummy. No, that probably didn't happen. They probably exploded. Because it was a box of cookies. No, really, it's a box of cookies. I'm sure the box of cookies has since been transported inside a sealed explosion-proof container to FBI headquarters to be... No, it hasn't. It was a box of cookies. A little bit later, the Gulf station there in Marshall's Creek, Pennsylvania, opened back up. Once everybody understood that this was just not going to be the day that ISIS won in their relentless struggle against Marshall's Creek, Pennsylvania. It was a long time ago now that I coined the phrase coward nation. Not C-O-W-A-R-D, but C-O-W-E-R-E-D, coward nation. We are nationally kind of collectively looking like a dog trying to pass a peach pit. But if you see something, say something. Even never assume, because you see the ISIS are inscrutable. Never assume that something is what it looks like. And even if you can't read the Islam writing, don't assume that just because there's a picture of a chocolate chip cookie on it, on the box, that that's what it could be filled with. It could be filled with fishing weights and C4 and a cell phone and some wires, and it could be a beeping right there on top of the gas pump. And if it goes, the gas pump goes, and my God, they'll feel it over in Fraser's Bottom all the way from Marshall's Creek. Be aware. Be alert, Merca. Because your potential future leader demands it of you. I'm talking about Benito Cheeto. Mm-hmm. As he said, there's a lot of bad people out there. And we're not being bad enough to them back. No, really. I mean, we are we are being subjected to a level of demagoguery that would shame George Wallace. Let's see here. What's the quote? It was earlier today when he went over to the Fox News. Damn, Arnold, I didn't realize that. Oh, they are inscrutable, the ISIS. Arnold pointing out it might be oatmeal cookies with raisins, not chocolate chips. And you know what? Them might not be raisins. That might be your Sharia dried currants. You can't never take too many. You can't be too careful. So anyway, over to the Fox and Friends today. They invited Benito Cheeto on. At which point, he said, I should be a newscaster because I called it before the news. This is something that will happen perhaps more and more all over the country because we've been weak. Our country's been weak. We're letting people in by the thousands and tens of thousands. Yeah. Because we're not doing like nasty enough stuff over there yet. I guess you probably noticed that our fragile little ceasefire in Syria went straight to hell when we broke it. Whoopsie, we had an accident. We accidentally attacked by air the Syrian army, which really is not good for ceasefires because it means the firing hasn't, you know, ceased. And apparently, the Benito Cheeto is running not just for president, but for prophet in chief, because he's going into the terrorism predicting business. What a country. So while we've all been, I just want to put this out there for the general consideration. While we've all been having kittens with, not all of us, I haven't, you haven't, as Steve points out, New Yorkers just kind of went about their business. But while those people, the Trumpansies, by the way, Jane Goodall, did you catch this? Jane Goodall said that, you know, noted anthropologist, zoologist, Jane Goodall lived among the chimpanzees, that kind of, yeah. Probably knows that species better than anybody except a chimp. Jane Goodall said that Donald J. Trump, millionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht and a plane, reminds her of a nasty male chimp who intimidates and beats his chest and shows his behind and carries on and behaves like a spectacle to get other members of the chimp troop, clan, bunch, tribe, gathering, to pay attention to him. And I don't know about you, but I felt personally vindicated because it's been a long while now, since Texas Betsy first mentioned to me the word Trumpansies as a moniker for his supporters. Yeah, that was a different one. I saw the Jane Goodall story a couple of days ago. Marty thought Jane Goodall. Okay, who's going to fact check me? And I hope you don't get rickrolled in the process. Jane Goodall, because I mean it was right there. I may even have it here. No, don't see it. But I did have it. No, but that's anyway. I saw that. But while we're having a hissy about the guy in New York, New Jersey, a little reminder. According to the FBI. Even in our current climate, the single greatest domestic threat to the United States, the leading domestic terrorist threat, is the group known as Sovereign Citizens. This story will take us to, Diane Fossey. Thank you. Thank you, Marty. Marty did his own research. This story will take us to the land, New Mexico, land of enchantment, right? Yeah. Where a story in the Santa Fe, New Mexican, brings us an account of a young fella by the name of Daniel Schiffmiller. Daniel Schiffmiller, about 21 years old, has declared himself to be a sovereign citizen. And the two homes in which he was raided, one is dad's, his other is mom's, they were looking for bomb-making materials. He's under arrest, Daniel Schiffmiller is. Because he violated his release from jail. He'd been arrested several weeks earlier, charged with a resisting arrest, assault on a peace officer, and two counts of unlawful carrying of a deadly weapon. Who knew that still existed as a charge in the United States? Apparently it does, because, see, Daniel Schiffmiller, age 21, did not have a concealed carry permit. Now, had he been in West Virginia, the police could not have touched him. Because you don't need one of those silly government papers to let you carry your Freedom Protector concealed anywhere you want to. And in this particular case, he got popped originally because he was videoing a traffic stop by the police. And then he charged one of the police officers. Not, I charge you with not. No, he charged him. And they arrested him. And they didn't shoot him and they didn't kill him. This is how we know Daniel Schiffmiller is a white guy. When he was arrested, they found that he had two pistols stuck in the waistband of his pants and a couple of extra magazines in case he needed to let fly a little bit more blazing hot lead. Each of the two pistols he was carrying tucked in his waistband had a round in the chamber, ready to rock. And yes, four more magazines in his pockets. But he didn't have a concealed carry license. On the other hand, when they asked to see his ID, he produced a driver's license over which he had put a sticker that read as follows. Peace traveler, I am man, sovereign, and foreign to... Wait a minute, does this call for the Jim Kirk voice? Peace traveler, I am man, sovereign, and foreign to fiction. I have no identity to my legal name whatsoever. I am not a natural person or legal entity of any kind whatsoever. I do not weave, W-E-I-V-E, immunity, nor do I grant jurisdiction. So when Officer Friendly, who did not kill Daniel Schiff Miller, even though he was armed to the teeth, read him his Miranda rights, Daniel Schiff Miller responded, "You're out of your jurisdiction." The FBI thinks they may have enough evidence now, having stormed the two homes, to charge Daniel Schiff Miller with what they suspect. Gary Schiff Miller is daddy, and he said, "A week ago, I may have told you they exaggerated, but they implied they've dug up more than I realized about him," because he had also said, "I think his biggest crime is being a gullible, foolish adolescent." Now, I only mention this because while Emery and Marveline are adding another couple of locks to the front door, and maybe buying a couple more Freedom Protectors. Well, they're doing that because Sharia law and the Muslims. Meanwhile, they probably live right next or on the same block as or within a general walking distance of one of these sovereign citizen the little ticking time bombs waiting to blow. Meanwhile, as far as primate research is concerned, yes, Arthur, he does. He reads his statements in Kirk voice. Well, I mean, that part of peace, traveler. I am a citizen of the universe. It just called for it. As far as primate research is concerned, we have been interested for quite some time about the vocalizations howler monkeys make, University of Utah's Leslie Knapp explained to IFL Science. Because if you go to the field and study these primates in Mexico or other parts of Central or South America, you can't help but notice the loudness of the calls. What they found was that species of howler monkeys who had the loudest and deepest calls also had the smallest testes, and vice versa. The quieter the howler the monkey, the bigger the balls. The smaller the balls, the bigger the howl. As Sister Carol Peaker points out. Coincidence? I think not. Nor do I. So just be aware, I mean, it ain't always the moose limbs. Not by a long damn shot. And sadly, well, okay, so I noted that even though he had two loaded with rounds in the chamber, 9mm pistols, illegally concealed upon his person, and four more magazines for said pistols, the police did not gun down 21-year-old Daniel Schiff Miller. Okay, just to give you an idea, the picture of Daniel Schiff Miller that I saw, he kind of reminds me of Sting in his Fade Rautha era when he was in David Lynch's production of Dune. I will kill you! Cut. Can we get it? How about I will kill you? Just another one, Mr. Sting. Yes, please. No. But that's what Daniel Schiffmiller, who didn't get gunned down by the police, reminded me of. But we have another name that we have to memorize now. And another set of circumstances to be aware of if one is of a skin tone darker than that of a paper bag. And the list is getting pretty damn long, too. Do not have your car break down in the middle of the road in Tulsa, in Oklahoma, while black. Yeah, we have a new name to remember. Because as Willie Loman's wife says in Death of a Salesman, attention must be paid. Memorize this name. Terrence Crutcher. Terrence, T-E-R-E-N-C-E, Crutcher, C-R-U-T-C-H-E-R, Terrence Crutcher. Terrence Crutcher had a bad day last Friday. His car broke down, as in stopped moving, in the middle of a road, in the middle of a street, in a residential neighborhood, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Stan. Some police officers who were on a totally unrelated call stopped. At which point, if this country had not gone just batshit crazy, maybe you'd say to yourself, if you were the person with the broken down car, well, thank God. Maybe I can get some help here and we'll get this thing out of the middle of the road. Somebody could come along, not hit it. You know, it could be a problem. This is not what happened to Terrence Crutcher. Terrence Crutcher, 40 years old, had a stalled vehicle near 36th Street North and Lewis Avenue Friday evening in Tulsa. Details are sketchy. We know four officers had handguns and at least one taser pointed at him. Officer Tyler Turnbaugh deployed his taser. And then Officer Betty Shelby blew Terrence Crutcher away. She is presently on paid vacation, administrative leave. Following the shooting and pending the outcome of a whitewash, thorough investigation. The Tulsa police wasted not much time in releasing the dash cam video. Sorry, no body cam video, just dash cam video. But they also had a helicopter hovering above. And so if you want to see this sort of thing, you can go and watch 40-year-old Terrence Crutcher get killed from two different angles. I saw them both. I do not care to see them again. That's a kind of reality television up with which, with which I cannot cope. After the news conference earlier today, the police released the video. The previous day, they had showed it to the Crutcher family and what is described by the Tulsa World as a group of North Tulsa pastors and community leaders. Well, what'd he do to get himself shot? right next door to nothing. His hands were in the air. Remember, hands up, don't shoot? This is one of those. His hands were in the air when Officer Betty Shelby disappears the entire universe for 40-year-old Terrence Crutcher. Terrence Crutcher, 40 years old, had no weapon upon him, had no weapon in his vehicle. It's not like he had a pair of 9mm semi-automatic pistols with one in the chamber in each gun tucked into his waistband and four more magazines in case they came in handy while as he went out and stalked the police. The Tulsa World reports an investigation will determine whether Shelby's actions were justified, but authorities have not said how long that investigation is expected to last and whether charges are expected to be filed against Shelby depending on the determination of that probe. Police Chief Chuck Jordan said, "I want to assure our community and I want to assure all of you and people across the nation who are going to be looking at this, we will achieve justice, period." Police spokesman Shane Tuell said, this one leaves a lot of questions. That's when some reporter said, what makes this case different from other police shootings? Well, this one leaves a lot of questions. Then District Attorney Steve Kuntzweiler said chimed in and said, we need to protect the integrity of the process. Well, I recognize there is a desire to have a quick answer. That's dependent on when I start getting reports. The U.S. Attorney's Office under U.S. District Attorney Danny Williams has said the Department of Justice has already opened a separate and independent civil rights investigation. City Councilor Jack Henderson said, my hope is that we remain a strong city, a together city, and we don't want to see things that happen in other cities here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Well, I think that horse is already out of the barn, Counselor. Because a black man with no weapon, who was no threat, has been gunned down in the streets by the police, just like happens in other cities. So it might be a little, wait. City Councilor Jack Henderson, what he means by that is he doesn't want to see anybody marching in the street or getting all uppity about the fact that the police have blown away another black male. Another unarmed black male. Then there was Mayor Dewey Bartlett.
Really?
Anyway, I represent one Tulsa, and once again, our city hurts. I want to focus on two issues. One is that there's a family, a good family that's been devastated by an event that they have absolutely nothing to do with. Well, unless you're talking about Betty Shelby, the cop's family there, Dewey, I think they have something to do with this event that's devastating them, because the event is devastating them, Mayor Dewey Bartlett, because one of your police officers killed their family member, beloved son, uncle, brother, father, cousin. Yes, they need the entirety of our city to come to help them grieve and to help them attempt to understand what has happened. But they also need the community to come together to assure them that justice will be served properly. Meanwhile, Chief Jordan said, if people want to protest peacefully, those protests are not a problem. Not a problem. Meanwhile, the family of Terrence Crutcher, 40 years old, unarmed, having a bad day, his car broke down, and got killed for it. They have wasted no time. They have called for criminal charges to be filed against Officer Betty Shelby. They've asked to see his body, and they've asked that protests be peaceful. Mr. Crutcher had a twin sister, Dr. Tiffany Crutcher. And they want justice, and they want Betty Shelby charged for killing their beloved family member. He was not in flight. He was not suspected of a crime. There was no emergency situation. If you do see the video, you can see a terrifying moment when there are four people in blue with their guns drawn. And then no more Terrence Crutcher. But be afraid of the Muslims. And of course, the Terrence Crutcher situation is exactly the sort of situation that Colin Kaepernick was talking about. There are cops that get away with killing black men in the streets. He said earlier. Well, with the announcement of the arrest of the bombing suspect in New Jersey, New York Repiglicking, and I'm sure God made little green apples, and if you eat too many of them, you'll get a bellyache and the runs. I'm sure he's a teabagger, birther, deather, ninther, tenther, bagger, bircher, healther, right, booger eater, by the name of Representative Lee Zeldin. And representing Lee Zeldin as quick as the suspect was in custody, took to the twit machine and immediately tweeted out, "Suspect in custody. You are welcome, Colin Kaepernick."
Huh? What did it, huh?
Colin Kaepernick called in the... what? It... he later issued a statement, Lee Zeldin did, saying, "This is that moment in time that reminds us exactly of why we're so blessed to have men and women in our military, law enforcement, and other first responders who would risk their lives and lay it all on the line to protect our freedoms and liberties. I'm insulted and disgusted when someone refuses to say the pledge or stand for the national anthem. That is their right of free speech, and this is mine. I'm so grateful we have our nation's protectors to do what they do and do it so well." Because Colin Kaepernick. Apparently, Lee Zeldin, it didn't work what he was doing, because none other than Soledad O'Brien immediately tweeted today, "I turned 5-0 today. You're welcome, Colin Kaepernick." These people. These people, these right-wing... Yeah. Oh, and there's, yeah, there's more. Of course there's more. Lots more. Brother Deacon Asa asking, how come your Tulsa mayor sounds like Hank Hill? I guess we're just lucky that way. Meanwhile, Ron, in the still not quite yet frozen over north, points out, I think the most interesting aspect of today's arrest of the New York bombing suspect is that a non-black guy survived a police shootout after being accused of a terrorist incident. Well, I'm not surprised, Ron, because, see, once Benito Cheeto gets to be president, they'll have to save this guy so that he can order him to be worse than waterboarded. Yeah. God, I miss not being here Thursday and Friday. I'm so sorry. But still, I'm awful glad to be back, even albeit on a patched together connection. I don't know if I'm going to have enough up and down to handle a call or a call to the 574-8178 number, or even a call to Skype. But there's only one way to find out, and that is for what we know here as conversation radio to be conversation radio. So we'll take a break. And thank you very kindly to Judith in Minneapolis, who just turned her $50 into $100, courtesy of Chris in Germany's challenge. That means that we have $75 to go to meet the entire challenge, courtesy of Chris in Germany, at which point we will have $250 to go to get completely caught up. So that's huge. That's big. Thank you very kindly, Judith. Billable Rick, subject line Rickrolled. Welcome back, Bob. I've been hearing the word Rickrolled used a lot lately, especially with reference to the media's punking by Miralago Mussolini's announced news conference last Friday. That was the ultimate Rickroll. That was just awful. You make the media stand around for a campaign event, at the end of which, and it involves a bunch of cranky old right wing white men, white wingers, who used to be in the military, saying Donald J. Trump can save America. At the end of which you walk up and go, ah, by the way, Obama was born in the United States. Goodbye. You're right. That's the that was the ultimate media Rickroll. Which, as Rick describes, which actually turned out to be an infomercial for the opening next month of his new Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. My only question is this. What did I do to deserve a burb being named after me? No. You don't know what it is, do you, Rick? So to be Rickrolled is, do you remember the Rick Astley song, Never Gonna Give You Up? Which, when it first came out, nobody believed that that little scrawny redheaded white guy was making those noises with his mouth. No. Well, to be Rickrolled is to look for one thing and be handed a clip of Rick Astley singing Never Gonna Give You Up. That's being Rickrolled. Meanwhile, with regard to the Star Spangled Banner, the National Anthem, the Pledge of Allegiance, and such like, Ron, still not frozen over because climate change up in the far Canadian North, says, I did four tours in Vietnam. Part of my naive premise, rationalization, is that I did it for just this situation. You want to sit down during the Star Spangled Banner or the Pledge of Allegiance? Go for it.
My only request is that you do it for reasons that you thought through rather than just another way to get your 15 minutes of media attention. Precisely. And I think Colin Kaepernick and the people who are supportive of him have done a pretty good job making clear why they're doing what they do. I mean, when we do the Pledge of Allegiance, if I'm somewhere we do the Pledge of Allegiance, I don't make a production out of it, but I get to the part where the under God comes in, I don't say it. One nation with liberty and justice for all. Works that way too. But again, you don't have to make a thing out of it for your 15 minutes of media attention. Exactly. All right, then. Let's take a break. You know the stress line number named for the inimitable, irrepressible Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. And then, of course, 304-574-8178. Or Skype to Skype from anywhere on planet Earth. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And with that, yeah, a little break and then back for what I hope is actually conversation radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. Okay, that was supposed to be a fade out. That's not a fade up. I guess I'm out of practice. We'll be back. Poskags. 11 minutes past the hour on this 19th day of September 2016. And hey, let's find out via Ron if this thing works. Does it work, Ron?
Testing, testing.
Testing, working.
It sounds, your actual audio sounds good. The bumper kept fading in and out and getting that weird sort of almost skip that you get when you were a kid on the AM transistor radio listening to some far off radio station, sort of fading in and out.
Yeah, for me down in Alabama, that would have been WLS Chicago, back when WLS played rock and roll.
Yeah, WLS, whoa, remember whoa?
Yes.
Fort Wayne.
Yep, and once in a while we could get Cleveland, and
I never got Cleveland.
And my dad was downright expert at finding a particular hill in northwest Alabama where he could actually bring in WLW Cincinnati and get Reds games.
Yeah, I got WLW, but at the time of night I could pick it up, the games were always over. WABC in New York, WBZ in Boston, New York, I got Cousin Brucey. I listened to Cousin Brucey when I was 12, 14 years old. That old sucker's still doing a show on Sirius.
You're kidding.
No. You heard it here, Bob.
I had no idea.
Yeah. In any event, I have an interesting story to pass on. Well, two of them, actually.
Oh, good.
One, 25 years ago, I got seconded into Canada's Department of Foreign Affairs, essentially the State Department. I got to be a diplomat for 4 years. I headed up international trade in IT and telecom for Canada. And my area of concentration was Middle East and Asia. One of the guys I ran into there was a retired colonel from the Canadian Army, a guy named Ken Murata, Japanese ancestry. Interesting stories there, which don't bear going into because everybody's heard him. But Ken moved, after he fully and finally retired, moved out to Victoria, British Columbia, colloquially known here as God's Waiting Room, because it has such a nice climate and so many old people and poor drivers live there. And
that pretty much checks all the boxes.
Yeah. Anyway, Ken comes back here once a year because his daughter still lives here, and we routinely get together to play a round of golf. Ken introduced me to a golf club 25 years ago called Highlands here in Ottawa. It's a military course, used to be military, two 18-hole courses, beautiful course, and they opened up a deal a couple of years ago for ex-military to join. It was all of $500, and they wouldn't take it all in one lump sum. They insisted on billing you in two increments 6 months apart. So I ended up joining. Ken came back today. Ken is 2 months short of his 80th birthday. We played from the white tees, where the course is 6,100 yards long.
Tell me you beat your ass.
I shot an 83. Ken beat my ass.
Saw that one coming. You know, the good ones get up there in age, and they just move it down the middle of the fairway. Never mind your big hitting, and move it down the middle of the fairway. Just go.
It was awe-inspiring.
Stroke, putt, birdie.
Yeah. No birdies. Just didn't have the number of doubles that I had.
Yeah. Didn't have any six putts.
No. And it was an inspirational experience. I enjoyed that a lot. I always like it when Ken comes to town. At some point, we always get into personal stories, of which he has a whole raft of personal stories, much like I have growing where I grew up. And he was growing up in Canada in World War II. And Canada did the same thing to the Japanese.
Well, I was going to ask. I didn't know if Canada did.
They did. And it was a formative experience, and he has absolutely no antipathy at all about it. He said, this country's done well by me, and my parents would admit that after they got over their fear, Canada did well by my parents. So, and leave it at that and move on. So we did, and have several times. Anyway, the other story is I was telling him about a diary that I found, portions of a diary that belonged to my dad, who fought in the Second World War. And Ken said, you on Facebook, Ron? I said, yep. He said, I've never looked for you. Which told me a lot also about how important he thinks Facebook is. He said, you know, you ought to publish that damn thing. And I said, okay, I'm thinking about it, but you know, it's, you know, one person's deep and deeply personal experience. It doesn't necessarily need to be put out there for everybody else to look at and go, aw. So anyway, he said, no, you ought to publish it. I said, why? He said, because most of the people reading it will have no idea what real fear is or what real giving is on the part of military personnel. They're not beast, and everybody seems to regard them as that now, or some sort of paper heroes. That was his words. That need to be venerated whether they've done the square root of sweet fuck all. So I'm going, this is not what I expect to hear from my retired Japanese colonel from the Canadian Forces. But he said, no, put it out there. It's a true picture of what it's actually like. And that needs to be appreciated for what it is, not for what somebody can make of it or glean from it. But put it out there as another experience of somebody who went through war. Maybe they'll think twice. And I thought, okay, that was fairly powerful.
Well, think twice, what, about making the war or sending impressionable young men and now women off to fight it?
Do everything you can to avoid doing it in the first place. That's his point of view. Anyway, after he said that really important stuff, and I'm sitting there going, oh, this was really important. The old cracker sank his 20-foot putt.
Oh, Newman. Yeah.
Yeah. Picked up his ball and just started walking toward the cart. And God, you don't know how much I wanted to go, Sensei, Sensei.
Teach me. Yeah, and let me, was it one of those beautiful straight arrows, or did it loop halfway across the green and you know, broke on a particular piece, you know, one little blade of grass and just fell?
Now, it broke the last 6 feet. It broke 6 inches in 6 feet.
And he read that.
Yeah. And he hasn't played that course for 10 years. Yeah. He just saw it.
And you, how many putted?
I too putted. I held my own. But it was, I'm sitting there going,
6 inches and 2 inches?
No, about 15 feet and about 2 feet. My putter kept getting caught in my skirt today. So,
yeah, I was going to ask if it was, you know, got hung up in the lace waistband or anything.
Yeah. But those were...
A lot of sexism, you know, on the golf course, in case anybody's wondering.
In case anybody's interested, yeah.
Yeah, alongside it. So he did not look and ask you if your husband played too?
No. He didn't look.
Oh, you know, yeah, okay. So now we're into Caddyshack territory where he's got the blindfold on.
Well, no, no. Ken is entirely mortal. On the very next hole, a par three, he took a seven.
Wait a minute. He took a seven on a par three and still beat your ass.
Yes.
He did. And you're telling this story in public.
Yes. Ken has shot his age. He's almost 80. In the last year, he's broken his age four times. And one time in a handicap event, he had a net 59.
I shot my age now 20 years ago on the front nine.
Yeah, it's... I just really love playing golf with Ken. I learn something every time. It seldom has anything to do with golf. But he is just a remarkable gentleman. Wears hearing aids in both ears because he did in his entire career as a colonel in the artillery. Well, he did his entire career in artillery, ended up as a colonel. But he's a special guy. I love him a lot. And someday I'm going to beat that little guy in golf.
No, you're not.
Well, maybe after, you know, the ceremony. But
yeah, right, yeah.
Anyway, you sounded good, Bob. Glad to have you back.
I'm glad to be back. That was a couple of very... I just kind of... After the hours upon hours with tech support, I just sort of retreated and hoped...
You wouldn't be associated with Frontier, Kelly's favorite ISP, would you?
How did you know?
Okay.
It's probably entirely too explicable, Ron. The idea that, you know, this is our, you know, this is just Merca.
It are, yeah.
This is just good as it gets. I mean, is your connection up there in that communist country you live in as craptastic as what your sister and I get?
Oh, no, no. I average 15 megabits down, 2 to 2.5 up.
See, that 2.5 up makes me all envious because I talk just from the technical aspect of this program. Yep. As soon as the program ends, I push a little virtual button that says stop, and that stops the recording. And then I begin the process of uploading the recording to the White Rose Society server.
Dum 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 dum.
Markang.
Is that how it?
Yeah, and at 1 meg upload speed.
Yeah, you're there for a while.
It's about a 20-minute wait.
With no hiccups.
Right. Assuming I'm standing on one leg and holding my tongue just right, and yeah, then. But, sorry, no, not going to happen.
I'm going to be upgrading shortly to fiber. We've got it.
Yeah, now you're taunting me.
I am. But apparently the service, the routine service, will be 25 to 40 meg down and 15 meg up. That's for the entry phase. And you can get... You ready for this?
I'm going to cry, aren't I?
100 meg down, 50 meg up. And if you want to pay an extra $25, I think it is.
Be still my heart.
You can get 1 gig down and a guaranteed 250 meg up. That service would run you in Ottawa roughly $90 a month. That's just for internet, but... But we've got to.
But we can't have job-killing regulations here in Merca.
Yeah. Well, it's still all private sector. I've got a one of my brilliant children. They're all brilliant, just like everybody else's.
Yep.
Garrison Keillor was right.
All above average.
Yeah. By the way, the most memorable bit I ever heard stuck in my mind from Garrison Keillor was his bit on a young Lutheran joining the orchestra. What instrument should we play? Ended up playing the bass. Yeah. Anyway, I've got a son that's heavily involved on the part of the government side of rolling out the policies and funding to make sure that people who live in rural and isolated parts of Canada have the same broadband capabilities that people have in the cities. Now, I don't know if there's a program like that in the U.S., but they're rolling one out in Canada.
In theory, at least many years ago, 10 years ago, there was a grant program through the USDA for rural broadband.
Is that sort of like the equivalent of rural electrification?
Kind of, yeah. And they were willing to throw perfectly good taxpayer money away on letting people out in the
like
sticks.
Like Frontier?
Well, but see, that's what happened. So at one point in time, the state of West Virginia was awarded a cool $20 million for rural broadband upgrade. Joe Manchin then took the $20 million, because he was governor back then, and handed every penny of it to a little company that then provided telephone and internet in West Virginia, a little fly-by-night operation called Verizon.
That was such a small amount, it probably didn't even show up as coffee and donut money to Verizon.
Well, it was enough to encourage Verizon to wait until the check cleared, and then completely abandon, orphan the state of West Virginia. We've been here a while. It's not working out. We're going to go in a different direction, like toward the bank. And the next thing you know, we've got this new outfit called Frontier that used to be Verizon, and people who were Frontier workers just became Verizon workers became Frontier workers,
and then had to
fight like crazy to keep their union protection.
Right. Yeah, and pension and health care.
I don't want to keep you on too long, but I mentioned the frustration.
Did I say something that upset you?
No. I spent these interminable hours with customer support, tech support, customer satisfaction. Press 9 if you want to.
Yeah.
Press
69 if you want interesting gratification right away. To remind you that we're not answering your call.
So after I talked to Alexis and Tara and Linda and Dennis and about 8 other people, nothing was good. It took that long for them to finally say, September 21st, maybe, kind of. And then a technician came out today, didn't get the problem solved, but I got it explained to me what's going on here. I said, those people on the phone, they don't know anything. He said, nothing. He said, because here's how it works. Frontier is a union shop. And I'm like, yay. And he says, yeah, me too. I feel the same way. And he said, but the problem is we've got a collective bargaining agreement. Yeah, I'm in favor of those. Me too. And he said, but they try to get by on the management tries to get by on the cheap, so they hire non-union call centers. And so the non-union call centers can't actually do anything.
or access any corporate records.
Because of the collective bargaining agreement. And so basically all they can do is, you know, pat your hand. And they've all been taught that the most important phrase in the English language is, I certainly understand how you feel. Because I got understood probably by 19 different call centers over the weekend.
Can I ask a small question here?
You can ask anything you want. It's a regular joint.
How many of the people you talked to did you feel had been given their names by a random name generator?
I figured they drew them out of a hat every morning.
I only say that because...
Now, to be fair, none of them were in India.
Okay.
I mean, they all seem to be in the continental United States because I've been...
Most of the ones you think are in the continental United States are in New Brunswick or Nova Scotia.
That's possible, but nobody offered me any poutine?
No, they wouldn't. No.
And they all knew who won the 1940 World Series. You know, because in the movies, that's how you always find out. If
that's how you always find out, yeah.
Well, you're really a Nazi.
Well, I'm really glad you're back. Frontier is, within the telecom industry anyway, is generally regarded as a pariah.
I was going to go for bubonic plague, but pariah works.
Pariah's about as bad as you can get if you're looking for somebody to buy you so you can walk away. They bought a bunch of distressed assets from Verizon and a couple, three other companies, and somebody figured, okay, we'll roll this all up in a tidy package and we'll sell it and make money. And it hasn't worked out that way yet.
Frontier even acquired some ISPs in California, for God's sakes.
Yeah. Well, if you want to have a national footprint, you got to be in California.
I felt so sorry for them. 1 minute they had working internet, the next minute they had Frontier.
Yeah.
I guess this will all kind of put paid to the... big sales pitch I was going to make to Frontier for a sponsorship deal, won't it?
They never listen anyway, Bob. You're hardly ever on the air as far as they're concerned.
But
they would know.
But my cell companies know I'm on the air because this thing's clicking. This meter's clicking faster than a New York cabbie.
Well, along those lines, I'm going to A, bail out, B, let you know that you're coming through loud and clear regardless of what magic you're using, and C, it's always good to talk to you, and we got through another conversation and never mentioned politics.
Hey, we didn't, did we?
No. So, in the interest of colonoscopies and no politics, I'm going to sign off. I encourage everybody to contribute.
Yeah, we're only 125. We're only 75 bucks away from meeting Chris's challenge, and after that, 250 bucks away from filling in the hole. That ain't bad.
I contribute, and it hardly ever hurts. It feels good, and sometimes I go back for more. So
it feels better than paying for a ticket down at the Ark Museum in Kentucky now, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Take care. I'm signing off.
Four.
Bye.
Later. Our buddy Ron in far not yet, well, not frozen enough that you can't putt. Well, Ron would probably tell you that frozen or not, that can't putt. But I didn't have a bunch of four putts or six putts, but no. So, look, it works. If you want to participate in some conversation radio, whether you want to talk about politics or not, or just shoot the breeze, chew the fat, you are more than welcome to jump in because it works. That was line one, 304-574-8178, and that was Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Jump in if you so wish. Oh, by the way, happy birthday today to our buddy Larry out in Berkeley. Happy birthday indeed. I hope it's I hope you have something really special and yummy for dinner tonight. And maybe Mercedes makes you a birthday cake with a candle or a few on it. And happy birthday, Larry. And program note. For those of you who have been following the saga of attempted medical care that we've been dealing with here, my daughter is having her surgery tomorrow, finally. And so there is a possibility I'll not be on the air tomorrow evening, which will keep the ticker from rolling quite so quickly on the metered bandwidth. Or, hell, maybe it'll be turned back on. Nah, it won't be the 21st yet, will it? But anyway, that's a possibility. I'll tweet, Facebook, etc., to let people know. Meanwhile, let's go back to line one and L.A. area. Are we reaching?
Bob, it's Billable Rick. How are you?
What's happening, Rick?
I wanted to wish you a happy back to the airways today. So much for the internet connection, huh?
Hey, well, so much for it's the free market, Rick, and we have to be grateful to God Almighty for it, because otherwise
here in America,
yeah, otherwise we'd probably have 50 communist megabits down and 25 anarcho syndicalist megabits up.
There you go, exactly. Exactly.
Socialism.
Well, it's good to be with you here in real time for a change.
Well, it is fun. To what do I owe the honor and the privilege?
Oh, I don't know. I just thought I'd talk a little bit about politics and so forth, and the how the Trump handsy is doing. I for the life of me, I do not understand why things keep getting tighter and tighter in the presidential race. You know. Obviously, Hillary is not a very inspiring candidate. You know, that's number one.
Well, I caught one thing in the New York Times earlier today, or maybe it was yesterday. It all runs together. They did some sort of deep analysis of the state of Florida, Rick.
Yeah.
And their takeaway line was, cranky old white people are the only thing that gives Trump a chance in Florida. And he's got cranky white people sewed the hell up. Hillary's got mostly young people. Hillary's got women. Hillary's got Hispanics. Hillary's got cranky white people. Cranky, scared, mean, uneducated. No. They even went so far as to say in Florida, Rick, it's not just the so-called uneducated cranky white people. It's the educated cranky white people, too.
Oh, jeez.
And you can't overestimate the fact, as Will in Chicago points out in the chat room, that Hillary is a poor campaigner. And I think Will is being generous in that.
Oh, yeah.
She's a terrible campaigner.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing that they're not doing is they're not using social media like Trump is. Trump is, for example, her events, you can get Trump's events on YouTube. You can't even get her stuff on YouTube. You have to go to CNN.
But this is a carryover from the primary days. Is she speaking to 20,000 people at a time?
I don't think so. I haven't seen that much. Yeah.
I haven't seen word of overflow crowds of people going out to see Hillary.
No, I haven't either. No, I mean, she definitely lacks dynamism. Obviously, if the race were just on charisma, Trump would win hands down. And it's, I guess, a good thing that it's not just based on that. It's also based on, hopefully, what the candidate stands for.
I think we're going to have to come up with a neologism for what you just described, Rick. It's not charisma.
Okay.
In Benito Cheeto's case, it's not charisma, it's charisma. It's charisma.
Right. Oh, I tell you. I mean, you know, Nate Silver's numbers have Hillary at like 57% to 59% chance of winning now, you know? And only at maybe anywhere from maybe 282 to 287 electoral votes.
Well, you know? Let's look at 538 right now.
Yeah.
I know. I've been told not to look at 538. Don't trust them. They can't be trusted. Blah, 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 blah. But still, I mean, you know, the Nowcast.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Daily Coast seems to be much more confident in the Hillary victory than Nate Silver for some reason. Maybe they're cheerleaders. Maybe that's the problem.
Well, yeah. Daily Coast. So the, let's see, the Nowcast for today. Come on, while I'm young. 57.2% Hillary, 42.8% Trump. And that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Florida is showing sort of Band-Aid pink.
Mm-hmm.
As is North Carolina.
Yeah.
As is Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
As is Ohio.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, I don't like the trend. You know? That's, it's very scary, the trend. I mean,
20 states out of 50 are pale blue to dark blue.
Mm-hmm, yeah, right.
Your beloved Iowa?
Oh, I know. It's solidly Trump, it looks like.
It's not quite that pale Band-Aid pink. It's a little darker than that, but oh, and by the way, my condolences go out to you and your Hawkeyes.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
I saw that coming, you know.
Well, North Dakota State is not a bunch of pushovers.
Well, hell, they got a starting quarterback who's going to play against my Bears tonight, Carson Wentz. So, you know, they've won five straight championships for the, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the NCS or whatever it's called. I forget what it's called. The league just below the NCAA. Or the CFB, I guess they call it.
But, yeah. But no, I saw that and I immediately thought of you.
Yeah, well, you know, I saw it coming because the Hawks just couldn't move the ball in the fourth quarter. They had, like eight yards for the entire quarter.
It's like Iowa always has one or two of those games every season. No matter how good they are, you know, they'll lay one to two eggs a season. And this, of course, coming from a Mountaineer fan.
Well, it happens. Well, your Mountaineers won, right, didn't they?
No, we didn't play. It was even better.
Oh, okay, there you go. Okay, you're 2-0, though, right?
So next week, though, it gets weird.
Yeah?
We're playing BYU over in the D.C. area.
Oh, in the D.C. area.
Yeah.
Okay, who's the genius who dreamt up that game?
Well, I guess there must have been some money-changing hands. And BYU has this hankering to be in the Big 12.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I guess it's sort of like an audition. Yeah, we're 2-0, and I'm not at all comfortable.
Yeah,
but it was a fun weekend for college. It was a fun college football Saturday. That Alabama Ole Miss game. Holy mackerel!
Oh, that was crazy. Yeah, that was crazy.
But people are going, ah, screw this, you know. So we better get back to talking politics and telling people.
Oh, people are okay.
And telling people, we better get back to telling people how to vote.
Well, I think that everybody should vote for Gary Johnson because he's the best hope for, I don't know, stoners to become president. I'm not really sure what.
Well, you know, 29 people in the hospital. I'm just glad no one was hurt, said Johnson.
Yeah, well, there you go. Exactly. Yeah. Thank God there were no casualties here. Wait, what about the injury? Oh, jeez. It's like, oh, my God. Oh, you know, I don't believe the guy when he says he gave up edibles before he started campaigning. The guy's like,
no, he gave up edibles. Now he's just walking around filling balloons out of his little vape machine.
There you go. Oh, jeez.
Of course. As Carol Baker pointed out, you can make fun of Gary Johnson not knowing what Aleppo is or in thinking no one was hurt in New York City, but let's take a look at Mike Pence. He doesn't ever want to be known by that deplorable word vice president because he won't be associated with whores and such. He also doesn't know the difference between a verb and a proper noun, so there's that.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, he's a winner.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not going to get totally worried until the polls show, like, either
I'm totally worried.
Pennsylvania and Michigan flip, then I know it's the Trump presidency, you know, at that point. You know?
But this is the thing. How do you make it better, Rick? How does she make it better? He used this thing in New York to savage her. Mm-hmm. And as if that wasn't bad enough, then you've got Mrs. Greenspan.
Oh, what's she doing these days?
Andrea Mitchell?
Yeah.
Yeah, she declared, this is just weird. This is just weird. She declared that on the one hand, and this is hockey puck material, it really is. She declared.
I forgot mine at home, Bob. I'm sorry.
You may crack a crown, buddy.
I got my mouth guards off. So I'll put that.
Oh, okay. Tennis ball. Now, so right. She was on air today, and here, let me just, do I have the, I think I got the audio here. Let's just let Mrs. Greenspan do it. Let's see, and this comes up, and here we go.
I don't want to speculate, but here's what we know, and I think it's important for voters to hear this and weigh it in making their choice in November.
So this is a clip of Hillary being very professional and refusing to speculate and not heaping dead burnt bodies and wanting to see veins in her teeth and all of that stuff, right?
Okay,
so she makes mouth noises that sound eminently reasonable, and then this.
A radio interview, an interview on Fox News from Donald Trump this morning before he met actually with Egypt's President Sisi, the meetings because of the UN this week, and then flew on to Florida. But this was Donald Trump earlier today.
We're going to have to be very tough. I think maybe we're going to be seeing a big change over the last couple of days. I think this is something that maybe will get, you know, will happen perhaps more and more all over the country.
What do you mean, more terror strikes?
Yeah. We've been weak. Our country has been weak.
Joining me now is Kristen Welker with the Clinton campaign in Philadelphia at Temple University, NBC national correspondent Peter Alexander here in New York. Peter, let's talk first of all about the dynamic here in the campaign. With this happening, we've always been talking about October surprises for several election cycles, but this is exactly what a lot of the people around Hillary Clinton had been concerned about, some incident. We recall how San Bernardino and the Muslim ban was
no doubt
elevated Donald Trump and gave him this tough persona in the primaries. He is now polling better than Hillary Clinton in ability to combat terrorism, although she has the reverse numbers, better than he to be commander in chief.
No, I think you're exactly right. What's striking now, we're 50 days.
Yeah, you got that, Rick? He's tough. Andrea, Mrs. Greenspan declared Trump is tough on terrorism.
With all of his experience in the government, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Jeez.
I mean, he'll send some of his he'll send some of his casino knee breakers or something.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, that'll definitely turn ISIS around. They'll like turn tail and run after they see.
Yeah, so on the one hand, Trump's tough.
Trump sees coming.
But Hillary is off message. I mean, this is not the I'm a fan of Hillary network by any stretch of the imagination, but Jesus, the woman can't get a break.
Not from
the Mrs. Greenspans of the world.
No.
Not from the clown car that shows up from 6 to 9 on MSNBC.
Yeah. And why isn't there
How many times, I'm sorry, I don't mean to talk over, but How many times does Donald Trump get to call for somebody to take a shot at her before somebody takes it seriously? You know, the remarks about her Secret Service. Let's let the Secret Service put down their guns and see what happens to her.
Yeah, that's smart, Donald. I mean, how about we do this? How about if we do a Mexican standoff and have the Secret Service agents protecting him lay down their guns, and then Hillary's Secret Service people will lay down their guns, and we'll see who stays alive. How does that sound? Is that a good idea, you think?
I don't think any of it's a good idea.
No, I don't think so either. but, I mean, nobody called Donald out on how he knows that there's going to be terrorist attacks all across the country. I mean, how does the guy, how does he know that, you know?
Is somebody feeding him information from, you know, somewhere that they've got, yeah, right?
Well, it wouldn't be the first time a Republican did that to get the White House.
Well, no, it wouldn't.
The equivalent of that, anyway, with Nixon did that with torpedoing the peace negotiations that Johnson had in place with the Vietnamese. You know, the North Vietnamese.
Oh, that's true. And then, you know, the...
And then Reagan, you know, the back-channel negotiations between Reagan's people and Iran to hold on to the hostages until after he was sworn in, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're, you know, they will not, they will not, you know, nothing's off limits for the Republicans, you know? It's all about acquiring power. That's really all they care about. And once they get power, they can't govern worth a shit. You know?
Yeah, and as Brother Deacon Asa points out, Rick, Trump's going to negotiate a better deal with the terrorists. We have a pretty shitty deal with the terrorists right now. He'll get them to pay for their own bombs.
Oh, jeez.
but the opposite of that, and what I think to be the more likely scenario, and there's actually some history to back this up, is that ISIS would like nothing better than to have a dimwit, an easily provoked dimwit like Trump in the White House. It's the same reason that Al-Qaeda far preferred Bush to Kerry and preferred Bush to Gore. You know,
right.
they tried to get Clinton to take the bait in 1993, and he wouldn't. And instead, we just put the no-fly zone in and killed a million Iraqi children.
Right.
But he didn't. You know, he wouldn't go into a full-scale, full-on warfare mode. But as noted with dim, you know, with dim leader, it was like taking falafel from a baby.
Yeah. It was. I mean, I've never really thought about it this way. But you know, we hear about 9/11. Like, you know, did Bush just let it happen? Did he know about it and just let it happen? Which very well could be the case, but maybe the terrorists decided to strike because they knew how he would react. You know, maybe if Gore had won, they wouldn't have struck in the way they did, just because they knew they had a guy who wouldn't necessarily lash out like a Bush would.
Well, he was entirely predictable. They'd had at least 6 months to watch his administration.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, remember, there was an airport security report done by what was it called, the Hart something report, and it predicted that something like this would happen. Now you hand that to a competent administration like a Gore administration, they mm-hmm. act on it.
Yeah, right.
But that report was given to the Bush administration, and dim leader literally handed it off to Brownie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he handed it off to Brownie. Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, and we know what happened to that. Nothing. Buried.
Heck of a job.
Right?
Heck of a job, Brownie. Heck of a job.
He didn't know what to do. I mean, it didn't have to do with horses. I mean... How can you expect the head of an Arabian horse association to know how to, deal with, homeland issues, let's just say, you know?
But that was never the point. The purpose of that appointment was pure, simple good old-fashioned political patronage.
Right, cronyism, yeah. I mean, if, you know, if the Bush administration was full of cronyism, which it was, I mean, all those no-bid contracts and Halliburton and, you know, I guess, what was it? Was it Blackwater, which can't keep its name the same because it has such a bad reputation? And what, Kellogg Brown Root, all those, you know, all those sweetheart deals, no bid contracts, and, you know, all awarded, I'm sure, to friends of Bush. And, you know, many, many people got wealthy, you know. Many people got wealthy.
Which is, which is, once again, the purpose of government in a Republican administration.
That's true. Or to steal the, you know, the collective funds, like Bush wanted to privatize Social Security. And what would have happened if in 2005 his plan had worked? You know, once 2008 comes around and the stock market crash happens, like, oops, well, so much for Social Security. I guess we got to end that program.
Right. At that point of time, it would not have been the Great Recession, Rick. It would have been the Great
Depression.
Depression. Yeah. The Greater Depression.
Yeah, it would have made 1929 look like, you know, something that pikers had dreamed up, you know?
Well, 1929 happened before there was Social Security.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So people who are disabled, people who get Title II disability for, you know, work-related injuries, that kind of thing, people who get old, you know, so-called old-age Social Security, it all crashes.
Yeah. I mean, that, just the thought of that.
I mean, I don't know if people really understand how near, even to this day, maybe 8 years of Obama has kind of made some people forget, but how near to absolute ruin we were.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, very close to ruin. I mean, almost a complete meltdown. We were losing, what, 1 million jobs a month or something like that, 800,000, 900,000 jobs a month.
And it's not like, and on the other hand, the stock market under Obama has just gone up and up and up and up and up and up. I don't think you can realistically expect Wall Street to respond that way to Donald Trump. But the thing is, the people who are voting for him don't care. It's like that. I mean, I've seen, to go back to what we were talking about a minute ago, Rick, I've seen that business about Hillary's Secret Service disarming, and then let's see what happens. Well, the for-profit media, to a certain extent, got a little case of the vapors. Shocking someone. Well, not if you've been paying attention to Wingnut Media for any period of time. They've been calling. You know, the NRA people and the gun goobs, the gun fondlers, the ammosexuals, the fundamentalists have been hollering for Barack Obama's Secret Service detail to be disarmed for 8 years.
Oh, have they? That argument was put
forward when Bill Clinton was in office too.
Oh, jeez.
But yeah. Suddenly, to the for-profit media, oh my God, really? This? they're not. This is not new. It's just that it hasn't interested them before, and they haven't been able to make horse-gagging wads of money on it before.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I know. It's really a scary time we're living in. I mean, I just, this upsurge of white supremacism, I mean, who could have predicted? Well, I guess after 8 years of Obama, I guess.
But that's the question I keep asking, Rick. Is it an upsurge?
Oh, you mean it's just always been there, but it was buried, and now
it's been legitimized. I mean, I don't think you can overstate the legitimizing effect that the Benito Cheeto, and I do love that name.
That is good.
Has had in terms of normalizing And, you know, the white supremacists and white nationalists and the Klan have all said, you know, we really appreciate Donald Trump making our ideas mainstream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, hell, I wouldn't be at all surprised if David Duke won his Senate seat in Louisiana, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if a former Klan leader can, you know, it's not like he's renounced it like Robert Byrd did, okay? you know, a current Klan leader, you know, adherent, if he wins a Senate seat in a state, that's like, that would be nuts, you know, but, you know, I wouldn't be at all surprised at this point, Bob, which is really sad, you know? You know, I was under the impression that with the millennials that, you know, race had kind of become much less important than it used to be.
Well, with millennials, it is much less important. But there's a subset of millennials that are called rednecks.
Skinheads as well.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe they're a tiny subset, but the subset that it matters in is the subset of angry white people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there just aren't a whole lot of black folks or Hispanic people in going over to post on Stormfront.
No, exactly not. Oh, jeez. Oh, I guess they would probably get a high-tech lynching if they tried to post on Stormfront.
Oh, Jesus, you know? Don't even, yeah.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help that.
No, I understand. But...
Uncle Clarence, you know?
yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, I mean, I guess it's, I'm just holding on. I'm just hoping that, you know, the debates are going to show Trump to be the buffoon that he is. I don't know that they will necessarily. He's done pretty well so far on the Republican side.
Well, it's interesting. I did see one report out, Rick, saying that Trump isn't much keen on having mock debates or practicing.
Yeah.
He just wants to go in and shoot from the lip.
Right, right. That's his style.
And it's worked for him before.
Now, yeah,
I suggest that there's a difference between a one-on-one and a 1 out of 19,
mm-hmm.
or 1 out of 11.
Right.
And that's where that really worked for him. But if you've got somebody like Chris Wallace moderating, and he's already announced that he's not going to fact-check anybody,
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
means Donald Trump just gets to stand up there and say, well, you know, I don't even think that's really Hillary Clinton over there. I think that's I think that's a cyborg.
Oh, geez. There you go.
Tell me it's impossible.
How can you disprove that, right, Bob?
Yeah.
Well,
you know, I already saw on social media that she's dead. That's a body double.
Oh, you've seen that? Oh, geez. Oh, God. Oh, I tell you. I mean, if we, you know,
she's dead just like the real Paul McCartney.
Right, Paul's dead, yeah. Well, it says so if you play the records backwards.
Oh,
right?
I know. Well, if you've got a record player.
And you're taking acid.
And you're willing to do that to your stylus.
There you go, yeah. But, I mean, it's like,
I buried Paul.
Oh, jeez. who's the moderator for the first debate? Is it?
I honestly couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I'm trying to say here. He was complaining about he didn't know if he'd get a fair shake from who the hell is it? Oh, is it Anderson Cooper? Maybe it's Anderson Cooper. But I mean, if the moderator is not going to do fact checking. Then I suppose Hillary has to do it all. So I hope she has a lot of information out there, like a lot of information from Snopes, you know.
But that's the scary thing. Rick, all the information in the world didn't slow down Trump in the Republican pageants.
Right. No, it didn't. No, no.
I mean, Jebbia was prepared with charts and graphs and color 8x10 glossy photos with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one.
Yeah.
As Mayella Ewell said, it didn't come to nothing.
Yeah, no, it didn't. It didn't. I mean, he was like one of the least likely to win at the beginning of the pageant there, the Republican nominee.
That was a joke.
Yeah, it was. And, I mean, it's, you know, are we electing a president or are we electing an entertainer, I guess, is what it comes down to, you know?
Well, there's a whole bunch of America that thinks that politics is a reality television program.
Well, that's, yeah, well, exactly. That's what,
Scott in San Diego just sent me the debate schedule, so I think we can answer your question and everybody else's
okay.
Real quick. Let's see.
So he's debating, even though it interferes with Monday Night Football, huh?
Monday, September 26th, moderator Lester Holt, NBC Nightly News.
Okay.
Tuesday, October 4th, Elaine Quijano, CBS News. I think that's the one he's worried about. Martha Raddatz and Anderson Cooper on October 9th. And then October 19th, nearest the election, the guy who won't call him on his bullshit, Chris Wallace.
Jeez.
Who handed in his journalistic integrity a long goddamn time ago.
Well, the only thing that's good about that, I think by the time you get to the fourth debate, I don't think it's really as important as the others because, you know, people have already, I mean, if you've not decided by then, you know, you're a freaking moron, you know? And I think the first and second ones are probably the most important. Probably the first is the most important. And the second one, you can, if you didn't do well in the first, you can kind of make up for it like Obama did last time around. Because I know last time around, the Mitster actually probably won the first debate. And Obama was very passive. You know, it was like the guy either was sick or he'd taken a Quaalude before the debate. I'm not sure which. You know?
Yeah.
And he just really perked up finally and showed some spirit in the second debate. Like, okay, I want to have this job another 4 years, you know? So yeah. That made a difference. So,
wake up!
Yeah.
Exactly. But I mean, there's so much crazy out there. I got a story here where, let's see, New Hampshire State Representative and Trump surrogate Daniel Tamberello claims that... that Hillary Clinton has a battery pack implanted in her brain.
Oh, my God.
And that's what's keeping her alive.
Oh, really? That's what's keeping her alive. Oh, my God.
This, in combination with the recent fondness for moo-moos, makes me think she's concealing a deep brain stem battery pack that counters her tremors from Parkinson's. My dad has this battery pack, too. They may have admitted HRC has pneumonia, but that's not why she has pneumonia. I believe she has pneumonia caused by Parkinson's disease.
Oh, jeez. What are moo-moos?
It's that sort of shapeless tent dress
like
Polynesian origin.
Oh, okay. Okay, it doesn't refer to cows. Okay.
No. It's sort of a shapeless dress done in the same sort of print materials that a luau shirt's done in.
Gotcha. Well, you know, with people like that out there, I mean, if he's a representing person, right? So if a representing person, or maybe he's just a surrogate for Trump, I don't really know. But if he holds that view, then you can believe there's probably another, you know, 10,000 people in the country hold that view, you know, or more.
Well, that's the whole point. These are not isolated events.
No, they're not. Yeah, I mean, this is no longer silly season. It's crazy season, Bob.
Scary season.
Psycho season. Exactly. We're not talking just, you know, we're talking full-blown, you know, psychopathy, not even neuropathy, you know?
Yeah.
Just nuts. Just
and to a certain extent, to the extent that you're out in California, and I'm not being dismissive here, but it's possible to be in a place like that and sort of be in a bubble.
Yeah, to some extent, yeah. I mean, we can at least, we can kind of, you know, I think I can kind of take a, you know, like a 30,000-foot look, so to speak, and realize how fucking crazy it is in some other parts of the country, you know? You know, not every place is like California. I realize that, and I'm very happy I'm out here instead of, you know, let's say in Iowa.
Oh, God.
You know?
Oh, wait, I've got cowbell of the night here. Snork in the chat room just said maybe Hillary got one of those defective Samsung batteries.
Oh, my God. I was just thinking of Snork when I said Iowa, because I know he's in a community that I
somewhere in Iowa, yeah.
In. I used to canvass in his community door to door for a couple of years when I was in college for a Citizens Action organization.
Anything for a buck, right?
Well, you had to pay the bills, yeah.
I sold plasma, but you know.
Well, that's okay. You do what you got to do, man. You know, but I learned a lot. I was out there talking to just regular people, and you know, I mean, that was the time of the Reagan Depression, the farm depression. You know, when all of the family farms, a lot of the family
farms, farm aid and all of that stuff,
they were corporatized, and you know, a lot of people lost their family farms, and you know, lots of people angry at Reagan. Of course, I'm sure a lot of those angry people still voted for him. You know. So, anyway, that was an interesting time. But I'm glad I'm not back there. I mean, I wouldn't want to have to deal with Steve Cantaloupe's King and, you know, running away from him across the border.
Or Joni Hogballs Ernst.
Oh, my God. Yes. And she was actually considered as the possible VP pick, huh?
Terrifying.
Oh, my God.
Well, Rick, have fun.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get to have Friday on the front porch this week, and maybe you'll get to be there. Or maybe you'll be on the back porch. I don't know.
I might be on the back porch. I got a brief that's due on Friday. I got another week extension, so I'm hopefully going to get it done this week before Friday comes around.
One of these days they're going to take a letter grade off of that thing if you don't get it in.
I know. No kidding. Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, nice talking to you, Bob. Great show so far.
All right. Thanks so much. You take care, Rick.
You betcha.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy, Billable Rick, calling from Southern California. Our pal, Scott, is also in Southern California. He's on the line. And let me, before we start the conversation with Punky, who is translated by Scott, a note coming in from Ralphs. And it is much appreciated in an effort to knock off the rest of Chris's challenge from Germany, followed by taking a bite out of what remains there. Ralph sent me an email saying, "Hey, Bob, I'm offering a $50 challenge. Hugs." Hugs back, Ralph. Thank you. Thank you so very much. So that's a challenge on a challenge. So that will actually... So what's the math for that? Your money actually triples? If somebody meets all or part of Ralph's challenge, that goes to Chris's challenge. And we got $75 to go on that. This would be $100, and we'd have $225 to go after all of that happens. So thank you, Ralph's. Thank you very, very kindly, and hopefully someone will take you up on that rather quickly, because it's about 14 minutes past the hour. And this Moran Monday is disappearing faster. Well, I was just anxious to get back to the mic, and that's what happens when I've been. It just flies by. Hey, Punky. I mean, Scott. What's happening?
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Well, you know, frustrations notwithstanding.
Yeah, I don't know. I missed the first like 15 minutes of the show, so I didn't hear exactly how you put together the technology that we're hearing one another on.
Bubblegum, Band-Aids, and baling wire.
Yeah, okay. Because I on your Facebook there, the other night when you posted about this, I sent a link. I think it was Get Human. And basically, it's a website where you can find numbers that get you directly to a person who can actually...
Oh, help. I didn't have a problem getting a person, Scott.
Oh, no, but the operative word is someone who could actually help someone who was above peon level.
I was all over their call center system.
Yeah, I got that sense. I did. But a few months ago, it saved me dealing with AT&T. I was being given a big runaround, and I found this resource, and I called a guy. I think he was down in Dallas or San Antonio or somewhere, But he was like a second in command to the chief head muckety muck of whatever I needed to have happen. And he was very efficient getting everything handled the way that it needed to be all along. But that's not why I called. The main reason that I called, I don't believe it's going to be quite like you were talking with Rick about living in California gives us an advantage in the sense that we have a vantage point from which to watch the freak parade as it goes past the rest of the nation, cleverly posed as a presidential campaign, okay, an election process. And I don't think that all is lost, but it will be to the extent that we focus our attention in terms of truth-telling and non-reality bashing. The diehard Trump supporters and even the rather casual ones, I'll chalk up as lost cause. What the focus needs to be on, I think, are those people who at first glance look at Trump as a good choice, but can be persuaded once you provide them the proper quotient of factoids and valid information. And also to get the people who are diehard, not Trump supporters, off their apathy long enough to generate just a modicum of interest and enthusiasm and do what's necessary to keep that crazy bastard from having his tiny hands anywhere near the levers of power, you know? And that goes double for his idiot savant friend, Pence, who has his role.
You know, I think you could just kind of leave the savant off part and we'll just work with idiot.
He's claiming that Dick Cheney is his role model, if not as a human being, as a vice presidential model. Well, Jesus Christ on a you know, flaming cross. That is scarier than, it's almost scarier than the notion of Trump being president, you know? But anyway, that's...
Well, he's kind of, doesn't that mean that he's sort of telegraphing what role he expects to play in a Trump administration?
Well, yeah, because everybody knows that Trump is, you know, tiny hands notwithstanding, Trump is going to be the ultimate when it comes to hands-off presidency. I mean, if you thought that Reagan basically gave responsibility to those around him, if you think that George W. Bush was that type of hands-off president, you know, you ain't seen nothing yet when Trump, if and when Trump makes it, because he's going to delegate the hell out of that thing because he doesn't want the job in the first place.
He's incurious.
Exactly.
And if it weren't for Dim Leader, we would probably be talking about him and trying to compare him to, say, Warren Gamaliel Harding.
Yeah.
Who exactly. Never really wanted the job either.
Yeah, and we saw how well that turned out, okay, with Harding. And then he up and dies. And who got in after him? Calvin Coolidge.
Silent Cal.
Yeah, okay. And then who got in after him?
Hubert Hoover.
Hubert Hoover. Thank you, Harry Von Zell.
But to think, and Harry Von Zell was a genius.
I know.
I love watching him on the reruns of the old Burns and Allen show.
Burns and Allen, yeah. There's on YouTube, speaking of Bonzel, there's a video from Tom Snyder's Tomorrow Show. It's an episode with Tom interviewing Bonzel, Jack Benny's announcer, Don Wilson, and a couple of other guys of that vintage and caliber. It's where, if you put in Tom Snyder and Harry Von Zell in your YouTube search thinking, you'll find it.
And oh, I'm fine. No, I'm finding that as soon as the program's over.
The one of the other guys is George Fenneman, who was Groucho's foil on You Bet Your Life.
Yeah, but on the Burns and Allen show.
Yeah.
The other thing is the ongoing bit with Gracie and men's hats.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think there's ever been anything funnier.
No, making little tags to put in the brim of each one, the headband, because there's so damn many hats left by frustrated visitors.
Right, and then she opens the closet and it's just, you know, hat. No. Oh, dear. And, you know, that show way predates me. But when they put it up in reruns, and I saw it for the first time as a kid,
yeah,
my dad and mom would sit there and just laugh their asses off.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because it was infectious, but I was laughing, too, because it was... Do we even have that kind of funny anymore? I'm not working the side of these kids today with their filthy potty mouths. No, I'm talking about that sort of, because I mean it was intelligent humor, and there was an intellectual humor.
Yeah,
I mean it was the kind of humor that I think probably inspired later comics. I mean, because the wackiness, the zaniness, the sheer madness of it, it's almost like you can see it translated into the stuff that leads up to Monty Python.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of something current or in the last 10 or 15 years that's comparable in terms of quality to shows like Burns and Allen, and then The Next Generation, something like Green Acres. Both of those shows were brilliant, in my estimation.
Oh, Green Acres, just, yeah.
Just on the basis of the strong character, the importance of defining and having the consistency in the characters, and also the
You missed the first 15 minutes of the program. Tonight's reference to the PayPal page was, you don't have to put down what you do for Hank Kimball down at the county extension office.
And Fred Ziffel and Mr. Haney. Oh, man. But I don't know how the hell I got on Harry Gonzalez. Oh, no, I was giving Hubert Heaver.
Yeah, Hubert Heaver. And the thing is, Hubert Heaver, Jesus, now I'm doing it. Herbert Hoover was a capable bureaucrat.
Yeah.
He just didn't think that government had any business giving up about human beings' lives. And so that's why he was able to order that black people be chained together to save the levees during the Great Mississippi River Flood of, what, 1927, 28?
Yeah, that rings a little bell.
The song Louisiana, you know, by what's wrong with my brain? You know, you've got a friend, short people, Randy Newman.
Oh yeah,
is just touching, pathos, heartbreaking. But that was that point in time when Herbert Hoover ordered black people to be free, black people to be chained together, to make sure that they protected that they worked on keeping the levees from breaching. And of course the levees breached and people died chained together.
Well, when I reference Herbert Hoover, I wasn't thinking of that, although that's a perfectly valid example.
No, chicken in every pot.
Yeah, but it was also the notion, the circumstances leading up to the crash in the Great Depression, and then his lack of adequate response to it are what, I mean, yeah, at some point he started doing some stuff, but it was like farting against thunder. It was audible to a certain level, but nothing, it's not going to overpower the roar of the thunder, okay? And the little that he tried to do, well, the good thing that Herbert Hoover did was he gave us Franklin Roosevelt. Or as my friend out here calls him, the commie on the dime. Jesus. Even out here in California, we do have a few people.
Well, there's a reason that the fascist symbol is on the back of the Franklin Delano Roosevelt dime, damn it.
Let's see, I don't have a dime handy. What's on the back? I forgot. It's like a...
The Foscase.
I run, you know, that
the
by me.
The bundle of rods that was carried by the... by the lictors who protected the consul in ancient Rome.
Okay. All right. It's just weird. You don't notice a dime, the intricacy of a dime. Like if somebody asked me, offered me $50, which way Roosevelt is facing on the dime, I'd have to really look at a dime because I don't recall. I just don't.
And naturally, I don't have one in my pocket.
I think I've got one. I just am not near my peg.
I do have, but I do have the most ironic coin in America today in my pocket.
Uh-oh, what is that?
That's the Helen Keller quarter for the state of Alabama.
The Helen Keller quarter.
Yeah, you remember the state quarters?
Yeah, they did those commemorative quarters.
Right, and Alabama's has Helen Keller on the back of it. And was resoundingly approved of by, you know, Alabamians, because she was America's first lady of courage. She was also a notorious socialist and occasionally communist.
Ah, okay. All right. And she wasn't she pals with Eleanor Roosevelt?
Or had yeah, she died and Charlie Chaplin and Einstein and... on and on and on and on.
Well, good for her.
And if I remember correctly, I think in his later years, Twain may have reached out to try to, and may have, I could be wrong, may have played a role in getting Alexander Graham Bell to take note of her, and that's how, it's part of how Annie Sullivan winds up going down from the Perkins School for the Blind in the greater Boston area down to Tuscumbia, Alabama, the little town with scum in the middle.
You are just a cornucopia of stuff that I either forgot I knew or never knew to begin with.
And I found a dime. And yes, the Foss case with a torch in the top of it is in the center of the dime, surrounded by like oak leaves or something.
And was that a symbol that Mussolini used on his flag or something? Or
I don't know if he used it on his flag, but the word fascist comes from Fasces.
Ah, okay. Again,
because the lictors were paid thugs who would beat the holy hell out of anybody who got near the leader. And they carried Fasces.
And their descendants are now in charge of security at Trump rallies everywhere.
You can make the argument. Oh, by the way, hey, I got to share. We got a little bit of breaking news here.
Yeah.
As we wait, hopefully, for Chris and Linda's challenge to be met. While America is having its collective hissy about Muslims with pipe bombs, you know, we had the guy in New Mexico earlier who managed not to get shot by police. Well. There was a court proceeding earlier today in the greater Houston area for Carrie Lee Ogborn. He was arrested on Friday. He's 50 years old. He went to pick up a package of what he believed to be explosives that he was going to use to blow up a building. According to the investigation, he tried to order the explosives online, you know, because you could do that with the internet. You know, just send me some C4, right? From an illegal weapons marketplace via an encrypted network, which disguised his IP address. But, of course, the whole thing was run by the FBI. And when somebody PM'd him, he said, yeah, I'm going to use this blow-up building.
Oh, man.
He's got a rap sheet for Grand Theft Auto, possession of coke, insurance fraud, driving on a suspended license, lying about a stolen car, illegal possession of a firearm and brass knuckles, stream littering, and no, it ends with brass knuckles. And so, while One of these days, and maybe the only thing saving us is that these goddamn right-wing bubbas, Scott, are so stupid they think you can go online and securely buy explosives, and it turns out to be the Thebes. On the other hand, you can, what the necks don't know, and thank God they're not listening, you can just go and buy some of this shit. I mean, sporting goods stores, remember the night we had the conversation about Tannerite?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of this stuff is not hard to find. I mean, I doubt that you're going to find it at some rural gun show or anything like that, but you will certainly, I guarantee you, you'll certainly find people who, all you need to do is ask one or two people, and you can get anything in this country. If you're persistent and you know who to ask.
Yeah, to a certain extent. And but with some of this stuff, it's not that big a deal. I mean, all you need for Tannerite is something to set the Tannerite off. And you can just buy that in a sport. I could, if we could transport you and Punky here, just fold space, and we could get in the car, and we could buy some Tannerite, lickety split. Because freedom.
Yeah. And see, that's getting to back to the issue of Trump's chances. That's the other ace in the hole, the joker in the deck. Current events, domestically especially, like we have seen in New Jersey and then in New York City, and that wasn't there a mole stabbing up in Minnesota somewhere? That stuff no one has any control over, and he'll try to capitalize on that with a litany of "see, I told you so's." And really, I mean, he doesn't know any more about it than anybody else, but the folks who support him don't know that, okay? And he's an opportunist of the highest magnitude and order. I wish I had words to describe how imperative it is that it be avoided that he come anywhere near the presidency now and in the foreseeable future. Because, well, first of all, we can do better. And second, it is not a good thing should something like that happen. I think Malloy put it best when he said, if he's elected, the next president will be the last president. And that's not a risk I'm willing to take. And I take my responsibility as a citizen and a human being in terms of protecting the country from all threats, foreign and domestic.
And the thing is, I agree with what Malloy said. It's kind of like what Einstein said about, I don't know how we'll fight World War III, but I know how we'll fight World War IV.
Yeah.
With sticks and stones. That's the same sort of sentiment, if I understand what your reporting of what Mike said. But there's also another worry here. Even if he loses, Scott, this country's not out of the woods because, as I've said before, he has blazed the trail.
Oh yeah, yeah.
In 2020, you're not gonna have some little milquetoast Marco Rubio. I mean, obviously that's where his heart lies. He wants to be president. He may be the only person who has more ambition to be president than Hillary Clinton. But the real serious hardcore right wing America uber alles, not even proto anymore fascist types. They're gonna have the long knives out, and Trump will have shown them, given them a roadmap and some magic beans with which they can achieve their fascist goals.
And really, in my lifetime, you know, you, in trying to find the start point of this crazy quilt, to me, it all started in 64 with the Goldwater
forces. Sure it does.
Yeah. And you've got to know your history so as not to repeat it or to at least learn from it.
And before Goldwater even ran, you had the John Birch Society out there, funded by the Koch brothers' daddy, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Screaming that Dwight David Eisenhower was a commie stooge.
Yeah, and if memory serves, didn't the John Birch Society have its roots in the state of Indiana, which, by the way, in the teens and 20s of the last century, was a hotbed, one of the biggest hotbeds of KKK activity, was the state of Indiana.
Yep.
Okay? This is not to tar the inhabitants of said state with too broad a brush, but I don't think it's anything close to being coincidental that Trump picked or had put upon him Mr. I Love Dick Cheney Pence of Indiana as the VP. Okay? You know, and maybe I'm just pulling at threads that are non-existent.
Okay, I did check out John Birch Society. It started in Massachusetts and is presently headquartered in Appleton, Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, there's some Indiana connection, though. I got to look and find out where I heard that or know that from. Maybe it was just very popular in Indiana because it was unfashionable to be in the Klan by the time the Birchers came along. Maybe that was it. But and Indiana hasn't always been reliably red, as I recall.
It's been sort of centrist, but with the takeover by the religious right, that's what pretty much locked up Talibandiana. I mean, they gave us Dan Quayle after all.
Yeah.
But yeah, Fred Koch, father of Chuck and Dave, was an early sugar daddy to the John Birch Society.
And one of the Koch brothers, also within the last 30 years, ran as vice president and was instrumental in the formation of the current Libertarian Party, as I recall. Was it David Koch? There's one of them that's very, very politically oriented, and the other one is just interested in shoveling money in the direction of people who can help his business. Charles was one of them, but David, I think, was the one who was actually political.
I mean, I could remember up into the late 70s and early 80s, one of the local radio stations where I grew up running the John Birch Society Report every day. Featuring an announcer, a really creepy-sounding announcer named Alan Stang, and he would end every broadcast. This is Alan Stang. Think about it. And it would be it'd be 2 minutes of screen. I mean, they called everybody a commie. Richard Nixon was a commie dupe.
Oh yeah.
But the thing is, they are normalized now. They'd kind of gone under. They'd gone beneath the wave. But they've had a resurgence. The Klan's had a resurgence. Every militia, sovereign citizens, the goddamn Bundys have all been normalized and raised up to a status of respectability by Donald Trump. And even if he loses, they are not going away.
Oh, no. And the guy Stang, the name rings a bell, but it reminded me of one that I was aware of, that a daily radio show was heard in the D.C. area in the 60s and early 70s. It was financed by H.L. Hunt, the oil guy from Texas, who, if not a libertarian, was certainly within hailing distance. of being one. But I think the spokesman was a guy named Melvin Munn.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Melvin Munn from Dallas with your Lifeline report. As how it went, it was a little foggy.
And again, Scott, the point here is where in America during that same time period that we're both talking about, where was the 2 minutes of progressive populist politics?
Well, it was there only to the extent that there existed a fairness doctrine and an equal time provision. And radio that was
right, but my point is that nobody was making the same concerted effort to have an impact on people via the airwaves. It's the same overall phenomenon that led to the rise of Limbaugh. You know, of course he's going to win in the ratings because there's nobody pushing back. It's an abandoned field because you've got a bunch of. Chardonnay swilling limousine liberals, I suppose. We don't want
to support anything on the air that goes against that sort of thing. Oh, that sort of thing. Muffy, let's see if we can give some money to a candidate and do some star fucking.
Well, it could to answer the question as best I can. I think part of it was because we didn't see it coming, and part of the reason we didn't see it coming was up until, you know, comparatively recently, there was not really a need that was seen for that effort. And I know that might sound like a cop-out, but it was like by the time we saw it coming, it had already arrived. And then it was a matter of catch-up. And then if you get a typical number of progressives and liberals together, they will have a task ahead of them when it comes to agreeing on what to order for lunch and the shape of the table where lunch will be consumed. You know, several steps down the way is what to do in response to the right wing incursion, to use a Nixon Cambodian term. Into the airwaves and the minds of the listeners and the viewers. You know, that's like third or fourth down the list over the lunch order and the shape of the table and who gets permission to speak.
Right, but I'm trying to reach a larger point, Scott, and it's this. You assert that we never saw it coming and when we did it was too late. I think I disagree with that. If certain people didn't see it coming, it's because they couldn't see over the noses that they had raised in the air at the idea of even talking to those plebeian people.
Well, yeah, that's part of it. That's a real part of it.
And I hate to come off like that, but there's the other thing that the for-profit media are getting so desperately wrong in all of this. The idea that all of a sudden this year, non-college-educated white people have become nervous about the economy. God almighty, Scott, they have had a right-wing filth machine, Limbaugh, Hannity, blaring at, it's like the for-profit media don't even know that AM radio exists. And as a consequence of that, that's how they got caught out. They were clueless. Scott?
Yeah, I'm not able to argue against anything that you've said. I mean, there's a lot of blame and a lot of responsibility for the current mess that we find ourselves in to go around on our side. I did, for a brief time, get myself connected to the Georgetown University station in the early 70s, WGTB-FM, which skipped progressive and liberal altogether. They skipped both of those steps and went right into radical. And I think there's still an article online called Radio Free Georgetown that you can find that details some of the adventures of WGTB-FM on the Georgetown University campus. Had a hell of a signal, but in the late 60s, early 70s, they were running gay rights programming, feminist programming, Hispanic programming, black radical programming, and the Jesuits were tearing what little was left of their hair out, you know. And we never worried about our regular listeners being upset. What troubled us was the possibility that a bureaucrat driving in from the burbs or some blue-haired lady out in Maryland somewhere was going to tune by and hear some of our zaniness and call the FCC. And we had more than a few run-ins with them. But that came and went, and now the frequency, 90.1, is currently occupied by C-SPAN. So they're continuing the unreality over the airwaves.
Oh, so that people can tune in the mornings and hear, let's go to the Republican line. I think she's got a wire going into her brain. That's what it is.
Well, yeah, they're upholding in a palatable way.
The stuff that makes Todd in South Carolina scream every day.
Exactly, exactly. But I think that article, also worth looking into, Radio Free Georgetown, WGTB, I think that's worth the listener's time to find out what we were up to. And you got to remember, Nixon was in office. Vietnam and Cambodia were still going full tilt boogie. Our euphemism for toking up was, you want to go take transmitter readings. And we literally would go into the transmitter room, which was in the bowels of this complex, and was air conditioned and ventilated and noisy, so people couldn't hear what we were up to.
I'm sorry, but I just had a little tiny giggle at the idea that there was a euphemism for you had a euphemism for a euphemism.
Yeah.
You had a euphemism for toking up, which is a euphemism for smoking cannabis.
Yeah.
I presume. I mean, yeah.
And the highest I ever got, I'm here to tell you, was while taking transmitter readings someday. I took some from somebody that I didn't know too well, and I swear I had an out-of-body experience. It was, and I must have been all of 19 or something at the time.
Well, that's when your best out-of-body experiences happen, Scott.
I could go for one of those now that I think about it, but anyway, I kind of went far afield there, but yeah, the need has definitely been there for the last 30 years, but you're not going to find it in corporate media. I mean, the best we're going to have is whatever we can find on the internet with folks like you and like Malloy and Thomas with FYI Nation and that group.
Well, and God knows it's a struggle to keep it going. Like Brother Deacon Asa pointed out a little early in the program, iHeartRadio is $1 trillion in the hole, and the guy that put them there is getting $1.5 million a year, whether he needs it or not.
Just don't seem right. Do it.
Nice racket.
Jeez.
And I'm told in the chat room by Sparky, Scott could never have handled the tie stick, Bob.
Well, I usually did okay with just about anything that I ingested, and there have been a vast number of things. But that one day, I don't know whether it was lace or whether
the walls
I was
are breathing.
Just...
Yeah.
Oh man.
Oh, fuck, the sky's turned paisley. Yeah.
Oh man.
Well, Scott, you and Punky have a good night. It's that Punky has been extraordinarily contributive this evening.
Well, he's back to normal. I would give him back to normal. He's even walking better. I told you there was the first week or so, one of his feet were kind of weak, and he favored the other one and wasn't hopping. But he still climbs his in and out of his house and flies over to me in the morning and talks to his birdie friend. Right now he's agitated because we had thunderstorms last night.
In San Diego?
I mean, hellacious thunderclaps and a magnificent light show. And that went on for maybe 15 or 20 minutes with nary a drop of rain, and then it poured. Well, the cat and the bird have been away from Midwestern weather so long, at least the bird has, I don't know where the cat's originally from, that they are, thunder and lightning are not things that, that are a part of their regular routine, so they were just freaked out beyond words. Hell, it was one of the thunderclaps was so bad that it set off car alarms.
Good
God.
I had
never seen that or heard that happen. So, anyway, he's still a little agitated from that, probably.
But he sounds chatty. Well, Scott, have yourself a wonderful evening.
Okay, Bob, you too, and hats off to all that you do. And I wish I could send money right now. I've got a British pound, 3 pesos, and 55 cents. And if I do anything, it's not going to be till October.
Off to the casino with you, my friend.
Oh, yeah, I should go far on that. All right, man, take care.
Later. Bye now. Our buddy Punky and his human, Scott, calling from San Diego. About 9 minutes before the hour, and yes, Ralph's challenge of $50 remains on the table, as does Chris in Germany's challenge. The way it all works out is that would amount to $250 worth of challenges. 125 have been met. If Ralph's challenge gets met, that finishes Chris's challenge and puts us to the good by about $25 in terms of the what remains, which would leave us at $225 to go. My brains are swimming. But the bottom line is, if you can, this is a hole we badly need to get out of. Thanks very kindly. No, not kindly at all. To the awesomest internet, the awesomest only internet we can get. Otherwise known as bug tussle, dented tomato can and string. So if you want to run over to headonradionetwork.com, click on contribute, and we'll go from there. And thanks to everybody who has responded this evening. Oh, what? Just to sort of round out the evening. There's been a lot of Trump talk this evening. Let's finish up. So last week he came up with these policy proposals. And he was going to rein in the out-of-control FDA. And all of their food inspecting. Mm-hmm. Wonder why. I mean, he never does anything that he isn't, that he hasn't had, you know, one of his short, dirty little fingers in. He went so far as calling them the FDA food police. And since we do food porn here, this really is kind of food porn. It was January 1990 when Thomas Purgatorio died from organ failure about 4 months after he'd eaten salmonella-tainted moose at a nasty little place called Buffet by the Sea in Trump's Castle Hotel and Casino. God, that's straight out of Monty Python. The Salmon Moose. Yeah. Salmonella-tainted moose. Yum, yum. Yeah, it killed him. His widow was also made sick by the filthy dessert. This was not salmon. This was salmonella. They sued for $11 million. They settled out of court for hundreds of thousands of dollars because Trump's bully pettifoggers blamed Mr. Purgatorio's death on his pre-existing heart condition. And then another lawyer blamed the salmonella on bad eggs that the restaurant had purchased from a vendor thereof. Yeah. Then there's the DJT, Donald J. Trump Restaurant, in the Trump Hotel in Las Vegas. It was investigated in a segment produced by KTNV TV in 2013 that they called Dirty Dining. They said the DJT restaurant is described as elegant, describes itself on its website as elegant and in a class by itself. And they went on to report it is indeed in a class by itself this week, receiving the highest number of demerits of all restaurants health inspectors visited. Then there's the Trump Cafe and Grill in Trump Tower. Mm-hmm. A week after he tweeted out the photo of himself eating his taco bowl on Cinco de Mayo, really, that same restaurant, Trump Cafe and Grill in Trump Tower, got cited for live roaches in the food area. 1992, Trump properties were described in newspaper accounts as having the worst track record for food-related health problems among Atlantic City's 12 casinos. 5 salmonella outbreaks dating back to 1984. One health department official said at the time, "We find it highly unusual that most of our problems in Atlantic City have been associated with the Trump properties. The physical part of the establishment is top of the line, but it all boils down to extremely poor food handling." Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? Live roaches in the food area at your Trump restaurant. That's charming, huh? Okay, another reminder, I may not be on the air tomorrow evening because my daughter is finally, mercifully, having surgery tomorrow. And I may actually have to drive her home, which may mean that I'm on the road at 6 p.m. tomorrow evening. I will do my dead level best to make sure that I put out some sort of Facebook and or tweet announcement if I'm not going to be on the air. If I'm going to be on the air, there won't be an announcement. See how it works? Thanks, everybody, for jumping in on the fundraising. We've still got a long way to go. We've still got another $50 to go in meeting Chris and Germany's challenge. Thank you very kindly, Ralphs, for yours. And beyond that, another $250. So tomorrow's fundraising goal, if we meet Chris's challenge, which has $50 to go, tomorrow's fundraising goal will be $450. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to everybody who makes all this happen. Thanks to you who keep this program going with your determination to support independent media. Thank you for your comments, your thoughts. Thank you for quietly listening and maybe occasionally screaming at the speakers. That's okay, too. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.